You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. In the most recent statistics available, 29.1 million Americans, 9.3% of the population, have diabetes. In 2010, diabetes threw Chicago White Sox rookie pitcher Dylan Covey a curve when he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. He was 19 years old and had just been selected one spot ahead of Chris Sale in the first round of the draft by Milwaukee. A $2.5 million signing bonus lay on the table, but a routine physical conducted by the Brewers detected diabetes. All that doctor's visit did was save his life. And we're delighted to bring to the broadcast Dylan Covey. If you had not taken that physical and wound up signing and had the Brewers send you to Arizona playing in that intense heat, who knows what could have happened?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the doctor said I was a couple of weeks away from going into, I'm not exactly sure what the term is, but basically like a diabetic coma. And they said it was basically a blessing in disguise that the Brewers had me do, because their team doctor was based out of L.A., and that's where I grew up. Right. So they were like, hey, why don't you just go knock this out and, you know, just do it because you're going to have to do it in Arizona eventually. So just went and did the physical in L.A., and that's was before the deadline, the signing deadline, and found out that information and then, you know, ended up, long story short, not signing. But
how were you feeling at that time? Were you feeling fine?
I felt fine, but it wasn't until I started taking the right medicine that I realized how bad I was actually feeling when I was undiagnosed, not taking medicine. 'Cause how I was feeling was I had kind of slowly was getting sicker and sicker, and so my body was just kind of getting used to feeling sick. Mm-hmm. And so I think I lost about almost 40 pounds my senior year of high school. And I noticed the weight loss, but I would talk to my trainer and be like, hey, I'm losing a lot of weight here. Do you think that this is, like, a good thing? Or, and he was like, well, you're working out twice a day. You're working out in the mornings. You're working out after school. You go to practice, you know. So it makes sense why you're losing weight. I mean, at this point, I wasn't at 40 pounds. Right. But, you know, I was still losing weight kind of fast. And so, yeah, I mean, it was definitely a life-changing moment.
It's one thing to lose weight. It's another thing to lose that kind of weight.
Yeah. I mean, it was mainly muscle that I was losing. So I would have games that I was pitching my senior year where my velocity was 88 to 92, and I had been known as kind of like a power arm my senior year of high school where I was sitting 95. So I'd have games where I was 88 to 92, and then games where I was 95 to 97, and scouts were kind of, there's rumors floating around that I was kind of protecting a shoulder injury or hiding a shoulder injury, and when they said that, I was like, no, my shoulder feels great, you know, I don't know why my velo was what it was, but I feel great, you know, so I thought. So there was kind of speculation going around that I was kind of hiding an injury, but I wasn't, to best of my knowledge, I felt great.
Mentally, what's this like now for a 19-year-old kid? Especially when you're on the cusp of realizing your lifelong dream of playing professional baseball.
Right. So, I mean, prior to finding out, I was like on the ultimate high, you know, just got picked in the first round, was just waiting to sign my professional contract and kind of get my professional career rolling. And then I found out 24, 48 hours before the signing deadline. And so that kind of was like a whirlwind of confusion and different types of emotions that, you know, not really knowing what to do.
Hard not to feel bitter.
Yeah, definitely after the fact. Especially when, I mean, I had my number, and we kind of agreed to it with the Brewers, and once that all that information kind of was brought to light, they lowered the number, which, I mean, is understandable. There's a lot of confusion on all sides, but I was definitely not bitter at the Brewers, but just bitter, you know, bitter in general, just that, like, why is this happening to me? I was there. I had not reached my goal of playing in the MLB, but I had, you know, that was a big step.
And you're there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're there. You're being drafted in the first round of the draft.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was one of my goals, obviously, with playing in the major leagues being the ultimate goal, but that was a huge stepping stone to reaching that ultimate goal. So when that kind of got, you know, swatted down, I was just kind of devastated for a little bit.
And also on top of which, you don't feel like Dylan Covey.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up going to San Diego for college and was still, you know, I was putting on weight and I was putting on fast because I was taking the medicine, but it wasn't good weight necessarily. I was putting on just kind of like bad weight, and it took me about 18 months to kind of get that weight to go from bad weight to good weight, right? And in my freshman year, I only threw about 30 innings, and it wasn't successful pitching, and it was a weird time for me.
So the Brewers shrink the offer by about $1 million, and your parents basically leave it up to you to decide: are we going to take the offer, or are you going to try and get better?
Yeah. The Brewers. You know, offered me slot at the time, and we had agreed to the above slot bonus. And my parents weren't going to make the decision for me. They said, you know, this is your life, this is your career. You have a full ride scholarship waiting for you. So if that's what you decide to do, that's great. You know, they were very supportive, and whichever decision I made, they were going to support me.
How agonizing was the decision whether or not to sign with the Brewers anyway or take time to take care of yourself?
It was a quick decision for me.
Really?
Yeah, but I think part of that might have been because of, I mean, we're talking about hours before the deadline that I have to make this decision.
Right.
And, you know, $1 million is a lot of money to shrink an offer by, so... The Brewers said that they were gonna be extremely accommodating, and I believe that. But I felt like being closer to home, in San Diego, which is like two hours away from LA, having you know being 19 years old, having my parents still meant a lot to me, especially with knowing absolutely nothing about diabetes and what it really meant. So I made the decision pretty quick. I think it was probably on our second or third conversation with the Brewers after finding out the diagnosis.
And what was their reaction?
They were upset. They bumped up the offer a little bit after I turned them down the first time, and I had kind of just made up my mind. And you know, I just said that I didn't tell them this, but I felt like I was devalued a little bit because of this disease that I just found out I had. But I felt like I'm the player. The player that they drafted was the player that they drafted with or without this disease. And, you know, now that I have it under control, why wouldn't you offer me what we agreed on? Or now that I know what it is and I can treat myself, why wouldn't you offer me what we agreed upon? Because if anything, you're going to be getting a healthier player. But, you know, just things went the way they went, and I ended up going to San Diego.
And was that almost surreal in a sense because you didn't plan on going to San Diego?
Yeah. Yeah, I was... pretty much 100% sure I was not going to go to college. And It was still exciting for me, though, because, you know, just it's a new, going to college is just a new experience. So I was still excited to, go. And it wasn't until I started, you know, having struggles my freshman year that I was like, man, did I make the right decision? I obviously had those questions, but ultimately I am where I am now, and I'm happy with it. You know, my journey has taught me a lot of lessons, and I think I've grown up a lot.
Was part of the decision, boy, the bus rides in the minor leagues are just interminably long. Sometimes they're 12, 14 hours, and I can't imagine sitting in the back of a bus and having to give myself an insulin shot.
I wasn't really thinking about that. I was just thinking about not having someone that I was really close to that knew the situation 100% there with me, and or at least, you know, within driving distance. Sure. And 'cause I just really had no idea what to expect with diabetes. You know, you hear about it, but you don't really know what goes into it. You hear that it's a disease. You know, the word disease kind of freaks everyone out. And so I just didn't feel comfortable being far away from home.
And at that time you begin life with an insulin pump attached to your body.
No, actually at that point I was taking manual shots.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, for about 2 years, 2.5 years, every time I ate, I'd have to give myself a manual shot. And then every time I woke up and before I went to bed, I'd have to give myself a manual shot. And that was tough because, you know, you're eating in the cafeteria at college and you have to either go to the bathroom and go into the stall and give yourself a shot, or just lift your shirt up in the cafeteria and just poke yourself in the stomach to give yourself a shot. So that was tough. I had to carry around this, you know, it's like a Sharpie-sized pen everywhere I went. Mm-hmm. That's like basically the needle that you give yourself the shot with. So that was tough, you know, carrying that thing around and having to learn how to count carbs and how to convert the carbs into the units of insulin and all that type of stuff. That took a while to really get a grasp of.
Dylan Covey is with us on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. You also learn at this time that you're not at all alone. The fact that almost 10% of the American population has diabetes, almost 30 million people.
Yeah, I mean, I remember reaching out to Brandon Morrow.
I'm glad you brought that up because I remember years ago interviewing him when he was with the Toronto Blue Jays because he used to go to the mound with an insulin pump.
Yeah, he was on the Blue Jays at the time, I believe. And my agent gave me his number. And, you know, I called him and talked to him. I was like, hey, what do I need to know and what do I need to expect? And he told me basically what everyone had, I mean, what like the people that knew what they were talking about, what they had told me. And he said, look, the first year and a half is going to be tough. You're going to have to get used to it. But then after that, it's going to be like, kind of like riding a bike. It's just something that you know how to do and you do it, or like brushing your teeth or tying your shoes. You just wake up in the morning and you do it. Mm-hmm. It's not like something in your life that's like an obstacle every time you do it. It's just something that you do. And that's 100% true.
But here you are, a strong kid with a gift from God to throw a 95, 97 mile an hour fastball, and you're losing weight and you're losing muscle mass.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely not healthy at the time that I called him. And like I said before, I had no idea. My body was used to being tired. And I remember I was getting probably like 13, 14 hours of sleep a day, you know, just going to first period of high school and just not being able to stay awake and sleeping. And then sleeping after lunch period and then going home and sleeping because our practices wouldn't start till 6. So I'd sleep in between school and practice, practice from 6 to 9, get home at 10 and sleep, and then just do the, you know, I just had no idea that my body was failing, basically, and I was just so tired all the time because I was just, you know, just sick.
You go to the University of San Diego, and it just so happens that you gain a roommate by the name of Chris Bryant. When did you first meet him, and what was that friendship like, and what has it been like since?
So, met him, and, you know, going into college, I was kind of like the guy, you know, because I was the first rounder.
You were the man.
Yeah, and... So I met him, and he was actually rooming with a guy that was also from Vegas, Michael Wagner. And I wasn't rooming with them, but we had like a apartment that was together, and they just shared like a bedroom. And then my bedroom was down the hallway or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. And Michael, Chris, and I just became really good friends over freshman year, and sophomore year we decided to live together, and junior year we decided to live together, and Chris and I were roommates our junior year. And you know, when you live for people for 3 years, you become really close to them, and you
like brothers.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely, sure. So we still are really close, Michael, Chris, and I. And you know, they came to my bachelor party, I went to Chris's bachelor party, they came to my wedding, I was at their wedding, and
it must have been unbelievable when the last ground ball that's going to give the Cubs their first World Series in a century is hit to one of your best friends.
Yeah, yeah, I was following that World Series pretty closely because, you know, he's one of my really good friends, and I was cheering for him, and but now, you know, now that I'm for the White Sox and he's for the Cubs, there's going to be a little bit of a rivalry there now.
I'd say
a competitive, a friendly rivalry, I guess you could say. But
I'd say so. But during this time in San Diego, you start to regain your muscle mass and your power, and your pitching comes back.
Yeah. So, tail end of my sophomore year, I start kind of honing in and starting to get feel for everything back. You know, I start throwing harder. I go to the Cape Cod League, and I have a decent, I don't remember exactly my numbers or anything, but I had a decent summer, and then,
scouts are following you again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, junior year, I don't have the best year, but I feel like I wasn't pitching to my strengths necessarily my junior year. You know, in college baseball, there's a lot of curveball, 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 fastball, curveball, curveball, you know, fastball. Yeah. And I throw a sinker, a heavy fastball, and that's, I pitch to contact and I get ground balls, and that's, you know, I just wasn't doing that until probably the last few starts of my junior year. So, you know, the numbers weren't necessarily great, but I'm thankful that scouts, you know, saw enough to, still take me. So.
And you get drafted again in the fourth round by the Oakland A's. Were you surprised it was them?
I wasn't super surprised because Eric Martin's my area scout in San Diego. He had coached me actually from maybe when I was 11, 12, and 13 or something like that. He was my travel ball coach when I was living up in Pasadena. And he had texted me that day and said, "Hey, don't worry. Like, I got you." And I was like, okay. And I remember second round passes, third round passes, and I'm upset because I feel like I have the stuff to be.
You were once a first rounder.
Yeah, I feel like that I have the stuff to be picked in those rounds. And so I shut down the computer and I'm call my dad. I'm like, "Hey, let's go to lunch." And so I'm driving to lunch and I get a call from Eric Martins. He's like, "Hey, I told you we got you." I'm like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, we just took you in the fourth round." I was like, "All right, that's, you know," still a little upset, but like, at least I got picked, you know.
So. And now you're gonna go into pro ball, and you work your way through the Oakland system. And last year you were off to a terrific start in the Texas League, and then you strain your oblique in May, and you miss the rest of the season. And what's going through your mind after that?
Yeah, I really felt like that year was a huge year for me. You know, everyone's Rule 5 year, I guess, is the year that they are like, okay, I have to put out right now, and I have to pitch well. And so I was really feeling comfortable with all of my pitches. You know, every single pitch I was able to throw down in the zone at the corners. I was throwing really hard. I just learned this cutter, and I was moving really well for me, and I felt like I was overpowering hitters. And then inning into my sixth start, I felt this kind of on a warm-up pitch, I felt this like a crunch on my left side, and I was like, oh, that kind of felt funny, but didn't really think anything of it. And then on my last warm-up throw, I kind of do it max effort, you know, on the throw down from the catcher to the second baseman. I was like, threw the pitch max effort and felt a much more painful crunch. And I was like, okay, that didn't feel right. So I called the trainers out, and then they said, you know, yeah, that's an oblique strain, and ended up missing the rest of the year.
And yet the A's send you to the Arizona Fall League, and after that they tell you, not only are you not going to be on the on the 40-man roster, but we're not going to give you an invitation to Major League spring training. Oh, what are you thinking then?
When I didn't get protected, put on the 40-man, I was really upset because I felt like, I mean, I understood because I had thrown, not including Fall League and instructs, I had thrown only 29 innings, so I understood why they maybe didn't put me on the 40-man. You know, 29 innings isn't a lot to go off of. But when I didn't get invited to Major League spring training, I was really upset because I felt like, hey, like in Double A I competed, and in the Fall League I competed, and I'm not even getting a shot. You know, so that was really disappointing.
And then the Rule 5 draft of the baseball winter meetings, and the Chicago White Sox select you. How'd you hear?
So I knew the date of the Rule 5 draft. I saw what time it was, and I saw 6 o'clock or 9 o'clock or whatever. So I assumed that was p.m. So I was thinking, I'm going to bed the night before thinking, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. So I'm like, okay, I have plenty of time to do whatever I need to do tomorrow and then, you know, sit down. And so I go to sleep, and I wake up the next morning, and my wife is actually on the phone with her sister. And her sister is like, so what do you think? And she's like, what do you mean? What do we think? She's like, well, Dylan's on the White Sox now. She's like, what? She ran into the bedroom and, like, jumped on the bed, and I was like, because I guess it was
9 o'clock a.m.
Right.
In Washington, D.C.
So 6 o'clock or 7 or whatever it is. So I roll over and I look at my phone, and I have a million messages and a couple missed phone calls, and just I didn't really know what to think. I was so happy because at the very least, this means I'm going to big league camp and getting getting a shot to prove myself. So, yeah, that's how I found out, and it's pretty crazy, but just so thankful for the opportunity.
In our remaining moments with Dylan Covey, do you feel like you're catching up for lost time?
I guess that remains to be seen. You know, I'm happy with where I'm at right now, but the goal isn't to reach the big leagues. The goal is to remain in the big leagues.
Sure.
So I think I'm off to a good start, but I still need to I still need to pitch well, pitch my best every single time out there, and I want to have a long, lengthy career, and I want to be successful. So
But Brandon Morrow told me a long time ago that being a major league pitcher, being in the situation he was in with diabetes, put him in the position of really being a role model that he heard from a lot of civilians. Has it been your experience that you've heard from a lot of people? Because a lot of people really admire all that you have gone through and the fact that you finally made it.
I mean, it's probably specifically with younger kids that might have diabetes and, you know, their parents will get a hold of me or get a hold of someone who will get a hold of me and say, hey, we know this kid or our son has diabetes and we'd love for you to, you know, write him something or meet him or, you know, whatever it is. So I've kind of had a few opportunities to meet these kids and be like, hey, like, I have type 1 diabetes just like you, and look at me, I'm pitching in the major leagues right now. Like, you can, just because you have this disease that maybe none of your friends have doesn't mean that you can't be, you know, you can't reach out and strive to do whatever you want to do with whatever it is in your life. So it's been pretty cool.
There's an old expression, dreams deferred are not dreams denied, and you are the personification of that and to be so admired.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So that'll do it for Dylan Covey and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.